You're listening to Around Comics, episode 216, brought to you by InStockTrades.com. Chicago, this is Around Comics, the comic culture podcast, where each week our revolving panel of guests talk about everything in and around the world of comic books and comics culture. And Around Comics is recorded at Dark Tower Comics and Collectibles, located at 4835 Northwestern Avenue in Chicago. If you're in the area, please drop by, like all these fine folks.
It ain't no Bozo Circus, I can tell you that.
There's many, many mute children in the background watching.
It's nice that they let him in for the holidays.
Hey there, folks. I'm Christopher Niesman, and we have an all-new roundtable stacked up for you this week. Let's get you introduced to everyone. First of all, sitting directly to my left, the artist of Nixon's Pals, Elephant Men. You've done some X-Men stuff here recently.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah? Mr. Chris Burnham.
Mr. Chris Burnham.
How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing pretty well.
Good to see you. Good holiday?
Yeah, my niece and nephew are much more attractive than any of your kids or relatives.
Wow.
There he said it.
It's true.
And that's out there now.
Yeah.
All right.
Hands down. It's like they popped right off the little Gerber jar and like into three dimensions.
Are these your relatives from Seattle?
Yes, my brother lives in Seattle, back to Pittsburgh, which is where me and the fam are from.
Okay, because I remember you were at the Emerald City Comic Con last year.
Correcto,
to see family. Looking forward to that. I don't know if I'm going to be able to make that show this year.
I would really like to.
The lineup already sounds good. I was reading some of the people that have already said yes.
So. It's going to be a great... I think Darwin Cook's going to be there this year.
You're right about that.
It's going to be great.
Well, what if he's going to have a fist fight with someone this time, right?
I hope not. I hope that the...
He was mellow in New York in April.
Oh, he was very mellow in WonderCon.
I would think so, being the guest of honor.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that was the Darwin Cook show out there. But, I hear these Darwin Cook stories, and I really hope that the reputation does not perpetuate itself.
I hear he actually killed Jack Kirby.
Bare hands.
Bare hands, yeah. One finger.
I'll give you new guns.
One finger.
Why don't you meet him?
Right to the larynx. Mr. John Suntris, the voice of Word Balloon.
Hi, ladies and gentlemen. Merry Christmas from all the boys and Lonnie Anderson and the Mandrell sisters. It's my Bob Hope.
And you you're looking very fit, very you're looking
well,
good.
Let's not go that far.
He's down to 160, 170 pounds.
Fighting weight. Actually, smart ass. I am down a couple of pounds, but not a lot. It's a deck chair off the Titanic, but it's there.
The last time we talked to you, you'd been weighed out in the hospital for a week, and look good. You look good.
Well, I appreciate
you look fit.
I feel better.
You have a glow about you.
Let's not go that far. It's the red kryptonite, I swear to God.
And finally, rounding out the round table, a guest that we've had on a few times, but not nearly enough, from Wednesday's Hall, Mr. Scott Cederwin.
Coming into the city scares me. I'm a suburb boy.
Oh, come on. It wasn't that bad.
Right. Podcaster brethren, though.
Yeah. So
always good to have you represented.
It's always, I'm close enough.
You know, this I was really excited about this panel whenever I was thinking about it today.
We were.
Seriously, because
Suntris, really?
We have, not to say our other panels aren't good, because I enjoy the revolving roundtable that we've really started to develop here on the show, but we end up a lot of times, talking to an indie creator about their book. You know, we had Lucy Nisley on talking about French Milk, or we have, Don Glute on talking about his career. We'll have someone from a very specific time in doing comics, or a very specific type of comic, and it's become a rarity that we're able to just kind of sit down and geek out about comics, and I've got a good geeking out group tonight.
Where is Tom Caters is the question.
Yeah, I'm kidding.
Yeah.
Well, that's the thing. I can usually count on Tom because he reads so much of the stuff that comes out on a weekly basis. I mean, he's a comic shop owner's dream, because he comes in and, has the 10 plus books a week that he reads regularly, but he always picks up, you know, new stuff every week that he hasn't read before. So Tom is always good to talk to about what's coming out. He'll be back. He's celebrating. We're as we record this, just so you know, we're still kind of celebrating the holidays. It's January 2nd.
That's right.
As we record this. So Tom is, I believe, in Michigan, celebrating the new year with his fiance and her family. I believe so. Either that or he's in Pittsburgh. I don't know.
It's Friday. It seems like we've had like 8 straight Fridays, though. It's been like a never-ending bizarre weekend. I had no idea what day it was this morning or yesterday morning either.
Yeah, well, we tried to go with the every other Friday recording schedule, but you know,
people show up on Wednesday night.
Yeah. Well, where's the show?
We had the James Robinson signing down at Challengers. We did a couple episodes there, and so we ended up recording like 3 weeks in a row. So it's been, you know, the end of the year is just, you can't schedule anything. It's
well, not only that, but it's also kind of a dead time news wise. It's a dead time magazine wise. I mean, even on this January 2nd, there's a couple books that I'm certainly looking forward to reading when I have the opportunity, but I haven't yet because I came straight from work. But yeah, I mean, certainly last week and this week combined, then it's like kind of a decent output of comics. But
yeah,
I really thought last week was kind of blah, and this week is just slightly
better. Well, you've got all the best of lists and all that. Which before we get too much farther here, and before I forget, a place that you can pick up a lot of the best of comics from the years at InStockTrades.com. And InStockTrades.com offers a huge selection of the collected editions you need. InStockTrades is your source for trade paperbacks, deluxe hardcovers, essentials, showcases, archives, absolute editions, omnibus editions, and more, all at great discounted prices. And remember that all orders over $50 do in fact ship for free. I placed an in-stock order today.
How much did you spend?
$62.53, I think.
So is that because I know that your wife was asking you not to buy anything because of Christmas and stuff.
After Christmas, baby.
So yeah, so the wallet opens up right now.
I got the Camelot 3000 hardcover.
Very good.
I was talking to the guys on 11 o'clock comics that Mark Beatty, if you ever come into Dark Tower, and Burnham turned me on to this, if you don't hit the dollar boxes, you are doing yourself a disservice, because he has so many little treasures in there.
Oh yeah, there's some weird shit.
Mobius art books. I was just
mining that tonight. Got some Gil Kane.
Yeah, Black Mark. Yeah. The Black Mark trade, which is incredible, from Fantagraphics.
Yeah,
Cedarly picked that up, and then a couple of
13.
I picked up a Gary Panner book. But a couple weeks ago, I came in here and he had 6 of the Pocket Lone Wolf and Cub volumes.
Oh yeah, those.
And I got 6 of them for five bucks.
That's crazy.
It was 6
those
for
are
5.
Great.
That's crazy.
Well, yeah, but it's the most expensive dollar finds that I've ever gotten, because I got 6.
I remember getting Tom DeHaven's Green Candles, which was one of those great Paradox Press mystery comics of the 90s. And I got that in one of the dollar boxes.
They're great. So, I've got 22 of the Lone Wolf and Cub Digest to pick up, but you can get them at InStock for like $6.50 a piece.
That's cool.
instead of the usual $10. And then I got one that I had forgotten to pick up in trade that I love the first issue that came out, and that's the Space Ghost miniseries that came out about a year and a half ago.
Oh, Joe Kelly's Space Ghost.
Yeah, Ariel Bedyard, isn't it?
Yeah,
beautifully painted art on that.
So and
all the Alex Ross covers, of course.
Went there, just did a search for Joe Kelly because I'm really liking the stuff that he's doing, and it's like, oh yeah, I forgot that he did that.
Yeah, so. There's a guy that has had a nice rebound career wise because I really think Joe has always had some really cool books throughout the years, and it just seemed like early 2000s, he kind of, like, I don't know, wasn't getting the right assignments.
Yeah.
And wasn't hooking up with the right editors to get good assignments and stuff. With the exceptions of those Superman,
Deadpool.
Batman, and, Deadpool. Well, certainly Deadpool.
Yeah.
Absolutely. No, that's one of his best books, but...
Oh, my God, Centrus is petting the dog.
I know, we'll see how long this lasts before the dog starts barking.
She hasn't even started barking at you.
Sniffs the fugitive juice on me. That boy's on the run, I can tell.
So I put in a nice in-stock order to start the year off. But,
Very good.
Yeah, but, we're talking about Joe Kelly. Maybe we should start there.
Are we looking towards the new year, or are we looking back at the old year?
Kind of a little bit of both.
Sure.
If you haven't read Four Eyes...
Pretty good.
Four Eyes is really...
I'm aware of I Kill Giants, of course.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, love that. He had a really, quietly, a very good 2008.
Yep.
And I like his stuff.
Four Eyes is another example, though, of one of these number one issues that I wish were longer so I could make sure that I actually liked it. Like, I mean, it was taking me along. I mean, it's fairly typical child learning about the world sort of thing. And then the last splash hits you with a pretty cool twist, but it's like, am I gonna actually like where this twist takes me or not? But it's like, I don't know if is it worth the extra $3 for me to know if I like the book or not.
Here's my mashup description of of Four Eyes: Road to Perdition meets Dragon Slayer.
Yep.
I
feel like I think most number one issues should either be double sized or have your big twist halfway through. So by the end of the issue, I know where you're taking. Like, I had the same problem with Astounding Wolfman number one, which was free.
Yeah.
And I mean, sorry guys, but the entire first issue was like every other werewolf story you've ever heard in your entire life, just done pretty well, but not a single original.
Splash
is like, hey, it's a superhero. It's like
you saw that with a lot of his other stuff, like Invincible. The big change in that story didn't come until the second story arc. And, you know, not to give anything away with Astounding Wolfman, it's kind of the same thing, is that you get a big change in what he's doing, but he takes a couple arcs to get there. And so, you know, that's maybe talking about comics in general, is that it's really hard to get someone on that the hook of that first issue. And Kirkman, for as successful as he is, his single issues have great hooks, but as a series, sometimes it takes a little while to really get into
to
it.
To a payoff or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. And I have no problem with that.
I wonder how that's going to change, or maybe it's better that it stay that way for the transition to digital that we all seem to be, you know, getting closer and closer to. Because I don't expect it this year as far as fully going over, but I think we're a lot closer than we realize.
To digital comics as a lead-in to paper?
Yeah. Well, that's what I'm saying.
I tell you at $3.99 issue, that's darn what right, I mean. You're getting closer.
Well, that's what I mean. I think I really do think this is going to be the test year of how much regular week-in and week-out readers are going to really tolerate, you know, books. And it'll be interesting to see what issues they say no to and what ones are dramatically lower. I mean, and again, it's partly because of the never-ending event.
Oh, sure.
Which,
and we can talk about that ad nauseum. I'd actually probably prefer not to,
okay,
because, you know, every podcast on the planet's talking about the $3.99 move and what that's going to do to comics and all that. And I think it is going to, you know, here I go. I think it is going to hurt a lot of independent books because people are going to be less apt to take a chance on them. But I'd say, let's go back to, you know, what we have been reading, what we are really enjoying right now. And you know, I read a ton of stuff over the Christmas break. I was lucky enough, I went out to my in-law's house out in Indiana. I didn't have to drive. I took the train.
Lovely.
And got the chance to sit down and read the hardcover of Green Lantern Secret Origin.
Oh, good.
What a great little series.
Oh yeah,
I really enjoyed it. And Burnham is looking at me cross-eyed.
I haven't read it. I like Geoff Johns a lot.
It's a nice retelling of the Green Lantern origin. It's some really geeky payoff pages.
And it's more fleshed out. I mean, it did what I think a few other attempts in the last few years at retellings of origins haven't been able to do, and that is bring something different to the table that seems to maybe stick this time.
What's nice is that he was able to do a nice retelling of the origin, but also in a great Geoff Johns way, retcon some stuff in that's going to have payoff.
Right.
And it's a lead into Blackest Night, which, there's nobody better in comics at doing that right now of saying, this has always been this way, don't look at the man behind the curtain, and now we're going to have an even better story built.
Introduce the real Sinestro? Those have all been fake Sinestros. Here's the real Sinestro.
Story was awesome, but no, he introduced the character that is the head of the Red Lanterns.
And also really did flesh out more of the Sinestro-Jordan relationship, and you can kind of now see, as in most great villains, a level of understanding and sympathy for Sinestro and understanding kind of where he's coming from. And at least I like it. I mean, it's different than Lex and Superman as far as a relationship, but there is a connection of we once worked together and we don't anymore. Yeah. And I, at least on Sinestro's part, says, I thought you were my friend. I thought you understood me.
And it's neat. I read a lot of Geoff Johns on the break, and it's neat to read one of his last stories in Green Lantern and see what a, you know, just hits every note. He's a seamless writer, and it feels so good. But then I started reading all the old JSA trades, and you can see he was a younger writer. He was still kind of finding his feet. Great stories, but it didn't have the same, you know, whiz bang pow that Green Lantern does.
Yeah, his game has gotten better as he's gotten more experience. Absolutely.
Yeah, but the JSA was the first stuff of his, wasn't it, really?
Yes. Yeah. Well, there was the Stars and Stripes miniseries, and then he came on with Goyer and Robinson, and then Robinson left quickly, and it was Goyer and Jeff, and then even Goyer left, and then finally it was Jeff's book.
Yeah.
What I like about Jeff in particular, not to belabor the event fatigue thing, but one thing that Geoff Johns does correctly is he does end each story arc. There is an end. They're all connected, and it will lead on to other stories. And certainly since the Sinestro Corps War, all of these stories have kind of fallen into the fallout of that and in preparation of Blackest Night, but still stand on their own.
Sure.
Secret Origins is a perfect example. Stands on its own. Introduces the Red Lanterns, which we're now getting into. But, I mean, I give the guy a lot of credit because you don't feel cheated as far as an ending goes. And that's the big problem with a lot of the events right now. Nobody knows how to close. I mean, there's, you know, putting in baseball terms or business terms.
Yeah, there's no ninth inning pitcher.
Yeah, there's no closers. Yeah. There's really no closers. And it's like a bunch of Saturday Night Live bits where it's like, yeah, it was really funny, but what's the pay? There's no payoff? All right. All right, well, I guess I'll watch next week.
Well, you know, it's one of the things, and, you know, we're waxing poetic about John's here. We have, and Tom's not even here. So, but he has, in the last couple of years, become very good at doing the events inside the events for the companies.
Absolutely.
You know, it's, you know, Sinestro Corps, great event. Not a headline, overhyped event.
Yeah, let's put 50 books out with Sinestro Corps. We'll do. Yeah. I mean, and they did do a couple one shots here and there, but. Again, the story has...
It was self-contained, for the most part. Two titles and a handful of one-shots.
And Marvel's doing the same thing. People aren't really paying attention to it too much, but Annihilation, event.
Yeah.
And Nova and Guardians of the Galaxy, connected.
Well, there's great pockets of what's coming out from Marvel that aren't tied to big events and stuff, and creators are left to do their own thing. And... not surprisingly, a lot of those are turning out to be the best reads that Marvel is putting out right
now. You know, absolutely.
Not just the sci-fi books, but, I mean, obviously what Brubaker's doing in Cap, what he's doing in Daredevil, and, you know, they don't seem to be inhibited by the events.
They
and still are, you know,
go on and do their thing.
And they're great stories.
But even with the death of Captain America, those are still, it's about the story there as opposed to, let's see, what can we do today? Skrulls everywhere. Everyone could be fighting. It's like, okay, let's get Death Captain America. Let's get out of the way. Okay, what's the story from here?
Well, and I'll even say specifically, I enjoyed a lot of Secret Invasion up until the very end.
Yeah.
And that's where it disappointed me because, again...
Well, like you said, there's no closure.
There's no closure.
What was Secret Invasion? It was a lead-in to Dark Reign.
Right.
And they gave us a whole 6 days in between that.
Yeah, and you know, again, I'm still reading it, and I still like a lot of, and the idea of Dark Reign does interest me, but I'm not going to. I was satisfied just reading the Avenger books.
I'd seen someone online that had a pretty funny line of loving the idea of the former supervillain turned corporate magnate who wore purple and green and was the big, I've never seen that before.
That's true. But the other thing that I don't understand is, unlike Luther, and this is, and honestly, I'm due to talk to Bendis, and maybe we'll have the answer by the time this comes out on a Bendis tapes with Word Balloon. But because I really do want an answer to this, I understand you're not supposed to pull at the threads because then the whole tapestry is going to fall apart. But really? Like, the whole government has forgotten that Norman Osborn was in jail? Because Lex was remade into this CEO that, you know...
But that was in, like, a reboot.
Yes, right. Exactly.
Yeah, which is different.
And, yeah, I mean, Norman was just in jail. And, you know, the news people are even saying, very odd that this man was in jail 2 years ago, and now he's in charge of all of our security. Sure. And it's like... Yeah, very odd. I mean, once again, SNL, really? Really?
Can you do me a favor? when you talk to Bendis,
sure.
Can you ask him to write me a good crime story again?
He claims that a lot of the creator-owned stuff that will be coming out on Icon, he's made a lot of progress on that. We'll see. I mean, I know that stuff that he and Maliv are doing on the side, and I forget who else is.
Crime Comics, very good. Big, cosmic, Odyssey's event.
Just close. I mean, that's all I'm asking, baby. Just take care of that ninth inning, and I'll be happy. You know, I mean, everything was fine.
I think that's more company edict than Bendis storytelling.
Yeah,
because it was to his credit, you know, Peter Rios over at CGS kind of woke me up to it. There is no more event at Marvel. It is that. That just is what they do.
Oh, no, and again, I understand, and they go back, Stan and Jack, there were never endings, there was always an intro to the next story, right? Which is true.
Sure.
But...
It's a different audience. It's a different...
Yeah, and also, again, they weren't making those stories with the idea of collecting them into individual trades, like they are, like that's where the industry is going. Yeah. And it's kind of getting to the point where it's like, again... No, we don't want a happily ever after the end, but we want a the end. Mm-hmm. And then, sure, we'll be back next week. We know that the story isn't over.
We're not going to stop collecting.
Well, yeah, and we know that there's going to be more shit next week.
Maybe that's what they're afraid of. It's like, man, these people have been looking for an out. Let's not give it to them.
Well, it's the weekly fix you need, so.
Exactly.
Oh, man.
Well,
every Avengers reader quits once there's a the end.
I quit during it, but
damn, you and me both.
Well, Scott, you I want to give people a chance to hear about your blog, which is really a good comic book blog, and you just kind of let it all hang out. You're very honest about what you write about. You don't pull punches on stuff. What is the blog, and how can people find it?
The blog is WednesdaysHall.com, and I guess that's how you find it as well. And it's a collection of reviews. You usually try to do a couple of reviews of new books a week. And I just do everything because I read a lot of different things, but from, what was it, this week is manga. I seem to be reading all.
Really?
What'd you read?
Solomon, which was... everyone's comparing it to Scott Pilgrim.
Mm-hmm.
I got you on a 30-second clock here, so go.
Do you?
Yeah.
Oh,
it's the manga 30 seconds.
Okay, I was figuring I'd get this at some point. It's imagine Scott Pilgrim written by Brian Wood is what I kind of describe it as. It's a bit more realistic. I think it really reminded me of Local and things like that.
All right.
But that was the big thing I got over the holidays and read a lot of. Right now I'm just pouring over Absolute Sandman number 4.
Yeah, I went really retro over the holidays, actually. I didn't read a lot of new stuff. I mean, I did read my new books each week.
Sanskrit?
honestly, I found this trade at another store that's a favorite of mine in suburban Chicago. And it was Mac Rabboy's run on Flash Gordon, which happened...
Oh, that's some nice-looking stuff.
Yeah, yeah. Mac Rabboy, for those the uninitiated, was the definitive Captain Marvel Jr. artist of the 40s.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, that guy.
And, yeah. People
think I busted balls, but I know exactly what you're talking about.
I would expect, you know. Because, yeah, he is. He's an incredible... And it was a great follow-up to Alex Raymond.
Are you looking forward to Freddie having a more prominent role in DC?
You know, I just kind of am bummed that, well, I'm, you know, I don't, well, I'm Shazam now. I'm like, okay.
Well, you know, I saw on the, if you looked at the Wizard cover that had the Justice League, it's the new James Robinson series.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And it was the Captain Marvel Jr. uniform, though.
I think Freddy is one of the most popular Golden Age characters that is a blank slate and seriously is waiting to have his story told. You know,
Sal,
I think that's great.
Sal and I were talking about this at work about a week week or so back, and we were talking about Captain Marvel has always been one of his favorite characters.
The big red cheese.
Exactly. He loves he loves the idea of Captain Marvel, and said what I would really, and I'm paraphrasing Sal here, which he'll cringe if he hears this. Kind of what he was saying is that, you know, the idea of Billy the Kid is kind of antiquated. He would like to see Billy. It's like it's time for him to grow up a little bit and not be the kid he wants him to be. And I'm like, well, they just kind of did that. They kind
of in the trials of Shazam.
Well, through sleight of hand, they've replaced Billy with Freddy, and so now you have an older person who is the Captain Marvel alter ego.
Is Freddy still like an invalid or a gimp or whatever you want to call someone?
You know, I don't know what his level of handicap status is. Yeah,
it's the politically correct.
He's a cripple. He's a cripple.
Yeah, but I still walk with a limp.
You know, I honestly don't know. That's a good question.
Like that was like the shtick of the old one.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Had the crutch and everything.
I can't remember from 52 if he was, because he was in 52. My exposure to Freddy and actually the whole Marvel family is pretty
well. Common. And I'll be honest, Winnick's Trials of Shazam really didn't float my boat, so I really wasn't interested in that story. I thought it was too long and ponderous, and we kind of all knew where it was going anyway. And it was just like, maybe read it in trade if I hear good things, and I didn't hear enough good things. But I would say that I do think that, again, it's an interesting character. I think, to be honest, what Sal was looking for was happening in JSA when Johns was writing Billy and Cap.
They dropped that kind of quick.
They did, and I wonder what happened, and maybe there was a word from upstairs, because I loved that whole idea of Billy and Stargirl getting together and her finding out that he's Captain Marvel, still loving Captain Marvel, and Flash, the Golden Age Flash, going, what the hell do you think you're doing with that little girl? And it's totally innocent because it's Billy. And it's okay, but obviously Jay doesn't know that, and it was really cool.
Oh, that was a great moment, and all of a sudden you're waiting for, so you're going to do something behind the old man's back or something.
I got to bug Jeff about that the next time I talk to him, because, that really was. It was really cool. And also,
I haven't gotten there yet. I'm only to Stealing Thunder is the last
part. Okay, you've got a bit to go before that.
I really think, more praise for Geoff Johns. I really think he writes the Marvels better than anybody. I'm looking forward to the Black Adam story that's coming up in Justice Society now that Thy Kingdom Come is coming to a close. So I think that'll be interesting. But again, I really, it's too bad, because I really think we finally had a contemporary Captain Marvel that made sense and good use of the classic character. And now let's focus on Freddy. Fuck him.
Yeah.
You're done, Billy. Go away.
Billy becomes the wizard. Sits in the Rock of Eternity.
And I hope he's a more active guy than Shazam ever was. And I think it sounds like in this JSA story, something does happen to take him off of the Rock of Eternity. So, I don't mind. Yeah. I don't mind progression in the Marvel family. And I love the craziness of Mary right now in Final Crisis.
Yeah, that'll wrap.
Of course it will.
That's
Or she'll die.
It's Desaad, right? Have we decided it's Desaad?
I think the last issue. That's making Mary crazy.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't realize that. I think the last issue basically makes it. I've seen old man eyes.
I'm totally sold on all that stuff, man.
Are you digging the Final Crisis?
Oh man, I love it.
Yeah,
I'm all about it.
I enjoy it.
I've recently reread the Batman R.I.P. and then the two follow-up issues. Oh man. RIP was pretty cool. Those two issues afterwards were awesome.
Yeah, I liked it too.
Oh,
That made me feel better about the series.
Man, that Grant Morrison guy is smart as hell.
We'll see. I'm still not sold on RIP. I am enjoying Final Crisis, looking forward to the conclusion of it to see if he can close the deal. And I think Morrison will be a closer on that.
He closes just about everything for me. Like, it's weird and confusing at first, but man, shut up and trust.
He has to close it because there ain't gonna be anyone else come on and finish it up for him.
No,
there's nobody that's gonna take that much peyote.
Yeah,
right. I'm willing to try.
Ride the snake. Ride the snake to the lake.
But no, there's some other good stuff coming out these days. I don't know if we've talked about it a lot on the show, but Night Witches which Garth Ennis is doing over at Dynamite. Really good World War II story about Russian female fighter pilots.
Oh, okay. Hmm.
Very cool story.
Who's so, drawn it?
Oh, gosh, you were going to ask me that, aren't you?
I like his last one-shot from Avatar. That was that Sherlock Holmes pastiche.
Etheric Mechanics?
Yeah, that was Ellis. Or, I'm sorry. Okay, yeah. Thank you. It wasn't Ennis, it was Ellis.
You know,
is it Crossed right now by Ennis?
Yeah.
That's a series, I think.
Yeah. Etheric Mechanics, okay. I keep trying to get through it. And
it's great.
It's great, but I keep trying to read it at like 11 o'clock at night.
It's great, but I can't make it through.
No, it demands your attention, and I think that's,
I'm getting sleepy. I'll try and read Etheric Mechanics. I get through a page, and I'm like, oh, shit, I need to read some JSA.
I've got it on the top of my pile right now, and I keep on looking and going, no, I'm not ready for this one.
Yeah, okay.
Back to Ennis, though, I really, I liked his other World War One, his war stories or whatever that... what's the other thing that he's doing? Not only Dynamite, or maybe it is another. Is he doing another series for Dynamite? Or is that the only one?
Maybe he's. I know he's doing.
I think he is. I think there is one. Yeah.
Well,
like,
it's a war series.
Yeah, it's like a series of one shots again.
Well, no, it's like 3-issue series. It's kind of okay. Like what Remender is doing with Crawl Space. It's Crawl Space is the overall
umbrella title.
And then they have XXX.
Well, then it is kind of because I loved those early 2000 war stories that he did.
Should it maybe
DC.
Called War Stories?
Did you read his Battler Britain?
Yes, loved it.
That was really cool.
And his Phantom Eagle was excellent with Chaykin. No, I mean, Garth is a great war writer. And I mean, you know, DC knew it and gave him a wonderful book with an outstanding format and wonderful artists. And they were all 48-page one-shots. Yeah. And it's traded. I mean, I highly recommend if anyone hasn't read those.
You know
those.
What? Did not like his Fury series that he did.
No, it was
I thought
goofy.
It was funny. I thought it was funny. I kind of got it. And it's in that Punisher vein. And in fact, that character's that interpretation of the character survived through the Punisher series. Obviously. Yeah.
That his appearance in the Punisher's Mother Russia arc,
classic.
I think that's like the best Punisher story ever written.
That is Fury. Drinking whiskey straight from the bottle in bed with two hookers. I mean, that's Nick Fury.
Right.
I mean,
well, but that's part of the Max Fury miniseries. I loved his nephew, his geeky nephew that was trying to...
Not that Fury. He wrote a World War II era Nick Fury.
Oh, excuse me. It's fine.
That's
okay.
The Fury Max I really liked.
Okay.
Oh, I didn't read the World War II one.
I didn't
You know,
like
I didn't
it.
Read it either. Yeah,
didn't
I was waiting
like
for
it.
The trade on that.
It was at the same time that Chuck Dixon and Doug Mankey were doing Team Zero, and I was like, Garth Ennis doing a World War II era Fury book or this Team Zero book, which one am I going to like?
By the way, Stealing Thunder is outstanding from Wildstorm with Chuck, and it's Chuck and Tommy Lee Edwards, I want to say.
Oh, wow.
It's fantastic.
Wow, is that out now?
Isn't it? Or is it? No, no, it's not Tommy Lee
I'll
Edwards.
Say
it's
like Butch
Geist.
Geist.
It is Butch
Geist. Still looking.
And it is. It's,
I don't see it.
I was going to say, where we're sitting, I thought I was just looking at a copy of it.
I know
I'm not seeing it.
I want to say it's on the 4th.
We are now scanning.
Yeah, Storming Paradise.
There it is.
Storming Paradise. Yeah. Yes.
It's a fantastic what if, and it really is awesome. It's about
Project
Olympia, which was the plans for the land invasion of Japan.
Yeah, what if we didn't drop the bomb?
Exactly. Oh, yeah. And you know, I told this
That's
to Chuck.
That sounds pretty cool.
You know, my dad. No lie, my dad was in basic training for Operation Olympia.
Oh,
it's
what if they decided to end the war with a conventional ground invasion of Japan
and
the bomb.
Granted, the success was there, but we all know what happened on D-Day. So I always tell my sister, I'm like, yeah, you know, we probably wouldn't be here if, you know, plans had gone through like that.
Oh, sure.
So I think it's an excellent story, and Chuck has clearly done his research. Butch is drawing his ass off. It is such a great story, and honestly,
hand
totally
it over
worth
when
getting.
You're done. I want to see it. The artwork looks really good.
Even the covers are just such great propaganda-looking World War II poster, parodies and stuff. It's just fantastic.
You know,
and that's been one of the best series of the year.
Another old school artist that, you know, I it was neat to see John Severin's stuff in Iron Fist and that kind of stuff from a nostalgia standpoint.
Okay. That BPRD story was fucking sweet.
Oh my God, his War on Frogs.
Oh, so good.
It's like, wow.
He's the most.
John Severin can still.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, he's right there with Kubert in terms of.
He has got it, man.
I mean, was that, you know, I don't want to diminish what he may still be capable of, but who inked that? Was that, I mean, was part of that the inker?
I feel like the thing that's,
I don't know,
that's noticeable about it is the fact that he inked it, I would say. That's like the thing that.
Did he?
Because the thing that's John Severin-y about stuff is the inks.
Yeah, it's the detail. It really is the detail.
Was good. And Dave Stewart's colors on John Severin, so good.
I picked up a couple of months ago an old issue of Creepy that's just all Severin.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, it was a bookstore up in like Michigan, and I'm flipping through. Oh, yeah, a bunch of old Creepy Warren magazines, and I picked one up, and I get home, and I'm just like, oh, it's all John Severin. Mm-hmm. And it had actually been forever since I'd really looked at his stuff.
The thing he did with Zimmerman, the gay rawhide kid that Marvel got all that flack for and everything, again, it was beautiful Severin art, and it's Severin doing a Western, which everybody wanted to see.
Was it Severin Inkin?
It was indeed.
That's awesome.
He's brilliant. But you know what I'm saying? It's like, you know, you can get a lot of these, you know, older guys, and they come back, and
Handshake as you get older. As people lose this stuff, and
don't diminish what inkers do. I mean, you can have pretty rough pencils that are handled by a master inker, and they can come out looking pretty darn good. Sure. So that key ink that is amazing.
You're getting a lot of John Severin lately because he did the BPRD. Didn't he join the Hex? What's the other DC Western that he did in like the last year?
Was he doing Batlash?
Didn't he do a few issues of that to start out with?
I'm not sure if he did or not.
I know he was doing. I know he was doing some Iron Fist stuff.
Yeah,
right. The flashback pieces, so the older Iron Fist. Yeah, and everything,
that in between Severin and Rusty.
Hats off to Swarzerski for maintaining the quality on Iron Fist when everyone was worried and shitting their pants over the guy.
I was skeptical, and not anymore. Shame on me.
Yeah, not anymore. Shame on me.
Shame in being skeptical. Yeah.
No, and I understand that, but you know when you get a guy who isn't known for his comic book writing to come into comics, you wonder how it's going to be. But he has been an X. I haven't been reading Cable. I'm not a big X guy.
Swarzenski's turning into a pretty damn good writer.
He wrote my first
professional work for Marvel. So thank you very much.
Very cool. Well done, sir. Much like our favorite writers that write comics and novels, like Rucka and other guys. Mm-hmm. If you haven't read The Wheelman or some of Swarzenski's other books, you're really doing yourself a disservice because he's an excellent crime writer. Yep. Excellent.
Wheelman, is that the one to read? Wheelman?
That was the first one that I think got a lot of prominence, and that's the first one that I read because that's the one that guys like Greg and everybody were recommending to me, and also Brew Baker.
Speaking of crime writers, did you hear that Donald Westlake just died?
Yes. I'm very sorry about that. I heard that this morning. So the man who wrote the Parker novels that now Darwin Cook is adapting Friday. He's the guy who wrote what became Payback and Point Blank, among other things. But yeah, he loved Payback. He wrote
Director's
under
cut.
What was his pseudonym for the part? Richard Stark.
Richard Stark. Yeah.
So, and did he do? McBain did the 87th Precinct novels. I forget what else Westlake is known for.
He's the Dortmunder novels.
There you go.
The Hot Rock is pretty hilarious.
Yes.
Yeah. As well as The Axe. Yeah. I give The Axe my highest possible novel recommendation. I pissed through that book in like 2 days. Amazing.
Well, in between Hollywood's love of Tom Clancy and Zane Grey, there's a shitload of Donald Westlake adaptations, and I guess Elmore Leonard as well. Shitload of Donald Westlake adaptations in Hollywood, not just the ones that we've just mentioned, like The Hot Rock and Point Blank and Payback. So, wonderful writer, died. He was 76, I believe. And it's too bad he died. I guess he had a heart attack New Year's Eve. So
And as we record this, this is January 2nd, so we're a couple weeks behind. So I'll also say a moment of silence for Eartha Kitt.
Yes.
Yeah.
Indeed.
Yeah. My dad very, very upset about that.
No, I mean, she looked great in the 60s.
I was thinking about you. Yeah. I was thinking about her when I conceived you, son.
I was going to say, you know, she was pretty hot as Catwoman in the 60s, but go back 10 years earlier in the 50s, and she was on fire.
My most uncomfortable holiday moment, maybe ever, definitely this year, is we're at my parents' house for a week before Christmas. They were going out of town over Christmas, so we're celebrating with them a week early. And Santa Baby comes on, and it's on their rotation, Christmas music. And my mom comes over, she's like, your dad just loves this song? I'm like, oh, yeah, it's a great song. It's like, no, your dad loves this song. I'm like,
I'll be upstairs.
Yeah. It's kind of like,
thanks, Mom.
Yeah. What's your information,
Mom? Yeah, this makes your dad feel, Christmas, Mom, kid. I don't want to know.
Exactly. Boy, there's a trauma.
Yeah.
Santa, yikes. Baby, a 54 convertible to light blue. I'll wait up for you, dear Santa baby, so hurry down the chimney tonight.
Another writer that I'm really starting to take note of, and you know, I've never read Supergirl before regularly, but Sterling Gates.
Yep.
Sterling Gates has game.
Yeah, it's good. He's, yeah. You know, he really, you know, he came to L.A. to be Jeff's assistant, Jeff Johns' assistant, and I think has developed into a very good writer. And I agree with you. I think Supergirl as a whole is an excellent book, and I think Jamal's doing a great job on the art for that
Bastards
book.
Got me reading
you
Supergirl.
You tell me I have to buy this book? Do I have to actually read that part of the New Krypton?
Yes. Damn it.
Yeah, for
yes.
all the New Krypton, it's so a great good. Story. Now, how, just to go with that, how much are all the New Krypton books tied together?
Very much.
Yeah. Are they? Well, I mean, so, do you
but
have
there's
to,
only, what, six of them?
Well, is
like
it,
nine now.
Well, yeah, that's right, because they did have the one-shots. That, and yeah, and there's also the one-shots along with the, I think it's an eight-part story.
It's all good. Yeah. It's all good. Yeah, no. And the Supergirl stories are really good.
Yeah, they really are. No, and I was all saying, right, for yeah. all the misfires of that series, since the very good, and I'm going to say this because the guy never gets enough credit and is usually shit upon, but Girl from Krypton that Jeff Loeb and Michael Turner did back in Superman Batman was a
I
good,
like that.
It was a good debut, and then the series was a bunch of misfires. Someone is nodding their head. No, I won't out them, but that's fine. I'm still going to say my piece. But it was a good mini series, and then there was all those misfires of Jeff's going to do the book. Oh no, I'm not. I'm sorry. I, you know, obviously the passing of his son, and he left DC.
Greg, yeah. Greg was going to
do it. Rucka was going to do it. I don't have enough time. Joe Kelly was handed a lot of continuity that he had to juggle for a while, as we were talking about earlier, his issues and not being able to find the right book for him.
They
and stuff.
Never know what to do with that character. At
well,
DC.
It looks like they finally did, and maybe it's because James and Jeff and Sterling sat down and said, okay. Let's figure out a path for Supergirl and a real idea.
You know, on the other side at Marvel, a similar character that they've never... It's always been a good character. They've never really known what to
You're
do with
Ms.
her.
Miss Marvel?
Miss Marvel.
Well, not anymore, because I think Brian's doing an excellent job with her.
Yeah.
Brian Reed, another great year for Brian Reed. I think he's just building on what he's done so far at Marvel, but I think he is another one of those.
I think his stuff is better than who he kind of apprenticed under.
I'm telling.
All he used to do is shave his head and he'll be big time,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah. No, Brian's, honestly, yeah, I think Brian has come a long way as a comic book writer, and I think, and not that he started off in a bad space. I think he's done a great job since day one, but I think he continues to improve, and the stories are great. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I think Ms. Marvel is one of those few characters outside of the Avengers that I'm going to give a shit about during this dark reign because, again, I think she's being handled well. It's an interesting character.
And I'll throw one more of the apprenticed under writers who I think bears looking out for, and I hope he gets more work, and that's Eric Trautman, who I think is a really, really talented writer in his own right.
Yeah, I've liked the stories that he's written with Greg. I don't know if I've read any of his solo stuff yet.
Has he done anything solo yet?
Not really, but, okay. You know, if you... And you've talked to Greg here recently, and I think that Greg would be the first person to say that, you know, Checkmate was just as much Eric Trautman's book.
Yeah, he was doing a lot of that.
Yeah. And that's really some of my favorite Rucka stuff.
Yeah, I'm sorry to see Checkmate kind of go... I guess under the current, I don't know what's going to happen to
it
post crisis.
Man,
yeah.
Checkmate is such an. I mean, it really is DC's shield.
Yeah,
and when espionage in a superhero universe is done well, it's thoroughly entertaining.
Yep.
And Checkmate has a space in DC that
it
I
should.
Hope,
yeah.
I hope that they don't abandon it because it's really, if it's done well, is.
Well, but maybe event. Like S.H.I.E.L.D., it needs to be an element of a story as opposed to trying to hold its, you know, own magazine. And I think maybe in the right hands, you know, it maybe needs a few more stories to grow.
But what I loved about Checkmate is that you had
Sasha,
Mr. Terrific,
right?
Yeah,
you know, it was a wonderful platform.
Yeah, I hated it when
they got rid of Green Lantern so quickly.
Me too, actually. And I remember
I thought that was great having him be the White King, and then. All of a sudden, first storyline. Oh, he's gone.
Well, and all the dirty business happening while he is the White King.
Well, I tell you what, and knowing Greg and his kind of influences and things that he likes, you know, like Sandbaggers and Spooks and and that kind of stuff. Is whenever you're in the espionage community, you know, the more it changes, the more it stays the same, and people don't stay in roles. And I'm sure he would look at that. Well, you know, of course Alan Scott wouldn't be there very long. You know, it's
That's kind of think that was his explanation.
And Rucka is always about change. Nothing stays constant in his books.
No,
and that was part of it. But it was just one of those setups that I really liked. But everything changes constantly. And
But you're right, though. I think it also did elevate Michael Holt as a character, and I think it only made him a stronger character.
Sure, and Count Vertigo.
That was fun.
Fire
was fun. Seeing her and have a serious, actual like role as opposed to the wahaha
story.
Exactly. Yeah. And my favorite was Mademoiselle.
Mademoiselle Marie.
Yes, Mademoiselle Marie. Exactly.
That's why we have Scott here.
And, I can remember.
It was again this like continuity implant that really kind of fleshed out the character.
The Thinker.
Yeah.
Sure.
The Thinker becomes more than just kind of a gag character. It's that's what was great about that series.
But I think one of the tough things was too, they were kind of positioning the Outsiders to be an espionage superhero book, and it leaned more on the convenience of really being a superhero book and less of an intelligence book. So we also have that with the Secret Six. I mean, the Secret Six is its own little group of mercenaries, but and another great series from 2008 that's back, thank God. But I mean, that's the thing. I think there was a lot of competition of being the caper book. And unfortunately,
doing that in a universe with superheroes and
well, the geopolitics that Greg was introducing too. Mm-hmm. Hey, you know, Israel really doesn't like what's happening in the DC universe right now. And it's like, oh, that's interesting. Where do you ever see that? And really see not only the UMEX and the fake foreign countries, but the real foreign countries react to actions by the Justice League or actions by some of the superheroes in general. That's awesome.
Well, I know that, and I hope I can say this, because I talked to Greg at one point, and he was talking about Eric as just an idea guy and his knowledge of the DCU and some of the stuff that Greg admittedly said that he would never come up with. But, you know, Eric was talking with him, I guess, one time and said, so what do you think Checkmate's contingency plan is for if the Rock of Eternity is ever compromised? And it's like, that is fucking awesome.
Yeah, I don't know, but I'd like to read that. Yeah. No, I agree with that. No, so yeah, you're right, man.
Well, that was the thing I thought was great with Checkmate, is because it made sense within DC.
Yeah. Yes.
Shield, just to go to that again, Shield's just there, and it's always just been there.
Yeah.
But with how Checkmate had all the ties with everything.
Oh, yeah.
Whether it was how they tied in eventually the Outsiders.
Oh, Shadow Pact?
Or Shadow Pact.
That was a great issue. You know, recruiting Detective Chimp for that one little stuff was just awesome, where it's like, yeah, we need you. What?
Well, that you have this, you have this espionage team, but of course, in the superhero world, they've got to have their magic expert, and you have espionage going on in this like mystical bar.
Now, you know, and you mentioned the hesitation you had when it came to Swarzyski taking over Iron Fist.
Sure.
I think, and I'll admit this, for 2009, I'm a little cautious as much as I enjoy their work on Fables and Jack of Fables. Willingham and Matthew Sturgis taking over.
We had this discussion on 11 o'clock comics this week.
Okay.
So why would Sturgis and Willingham, with the track record that they now have with Fables and with House of Mystery the other stuff that Matt Sturgis has done of The Beetle, very good stuff, why would you have any sort of trepidation of continuing to read JSA?
Because as much as I love Fables and Jack of Fables, there was no decades of continuity that, you know, inform these characters to worry about. And I always feel that Willingham is stronger when left unfettered by continuity. I think, and again, it's all dependent on
in the case of Fables, you only have several hundred or maybe thousands of years of continuity.
You didn't see Pinocchio
Snow White never was there.
Right, exactly. That's what I was going to say. Wait a minute. Yeah, exactly. Snow White wasn't that bitchy. Bigby Wolf. Yeah, the Big Bad Wolf wasn't. You know, I mean, come on. Yeah, we had labels. You had labels, but you really didn't have the whole Prince Charming being a dick. That was never in the actual fairy tales.
Because changing old comic book characters to update them, make them relevant, that never happened.
No, I understand that. And honestly, I'm rooting for them. I do like both of them, and I like most of their stuff. And again, I will be buying it, but and seeing how it goes. But I got to be honest, as much as I love Days of Vengeance, I wasn't crazy about Shadow Pact. Really? I didn't think it was that good of a
game. I enjoyed Shadow Pact.
So, I mean, you know.
It'll, and it's hard because, you know, you're dealing with, how long has Jeff Johns been writing JSA now?
You got to figure.
Well, since 2000.
Yeah, I'm sure he's done over 100 issues.
Oh, yeah. Easily. Oh, yeah, no. 8 years? They got to like 75 or 76 of the, or was it the 90s that they got into? Maybe they got into the 90s.
I want to say they got into 80s, but you had a handful of issues there that weren't run by him.
That's true. Keith Champagne took over an arc.
25 issues of this one.
Yeah, I think it's been over 100 issues of Chase.
Yeah,
so sure.
Yeah, I mean, so
yeah, but he also had Training Wheels on because they had they had Goyer and Robinson there.
Yeah, but still, he's been associated with the book for almost a decade.
Sure.
Yeah. So yeah, a lot of people are going to have this. Ooh.
Oh, I understand.
I'm one of those that have those ooh,
trepidations.
Kind of.
Well, can I give you an easy fix? Although I know right now maybe things aren't great with him in DC management. Mark Waid. Mark Waid would be an excellent choice for JSA.
I just want him to write. After the last two issues of Spider-Man, I want him to write Spider-Man forever.
I just want someone that gets
good. Yeah.
and again, it's because it's the JSA and it does represent that feeling of the entire superhero nation of the DCU. I want someone that really is steeped in continuity, and with respect to Willingham and Sturgis, I haven't seen that from them successfully.
They better get out of the blocks fast.
Well, exactly, man. There you go. And maybe that's the plan. Maybe they know that. So, and I hope to be proven wrong.
They better be introducing some really fucking obscure appears one time in an issue of,
that's right.
of
make,
Adventure
make
Comics.
Make the red torpedo matter.
Yeah, the red bee. Yeah. You better have the red bee in that first fucking
say,
issue.
The red bee. Red
that's,
bee's
that's
dead.
Your
you
big,
haven't gotten
there yet. Revamp.
Have you finished Starman yet or no?
How far are you into Starman? I'm going to read it as the Omnibuy.
The Omnibuy.
Yeah,
Omnibuy sounds like a great Kirby villain.
Yeah, I was gonna say the Chuck Norris movie, wasn't that like the Fall of the Octagon with the Omnibuy? I thought so. Yeah.
No, I've been going a little omnibus crazy, reading the Kirby.
You got money to burn, son.
Yeah.
I gotta get one of these jobs you speak of.
Yeah. InStockTrades.com.
It does help.
InStockTrades.com. Actually, I traded some stuff.
You forgot that part.
Yeah.
No, it's true. They're good people.
I traded in some stuff here at the store and picked up the third of the Fourth World Omnibus.
Look out. What's in the third volume there?
Have you read it yet?
It's mostly Mr. Miracle stuff.
Oh, that's cool.
Oh, it's the fourth one.
Yeah, the third
one. So is this Forever People?
The third one wraps up Jimmy Olsen and the Forever People.
I love Jimmy Olsen.
And then the fourth one, from what I've heard, is tying up a lot of loose ends. Apparently, they were telling Jack to wrap it up, and it's pretty rushed. Because the Hunger Dogs lasted like 10 issues longer
than the others, and then the Hunger Dogs.
Yeah.
That was a big splash, man, in the 80s when that came out.
Well, that's apparently the fourth volume is a lot of Mr. Miracle and the Hunger Dogs.
Okay. Hunger Dogs is all right.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'll say
it's pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, Jack's art was getting shaky at that point, but...
I would set your expectations low, and then hopefully you'll be pleasantly surprised. Like it's not like the New Gods issue 20 or whatever. Like it definitely doesn't get to wrap up all this epic imagination that you know think it should have, but it's pretty good.
According to Tim Seeley, if you're not reading or have read Devil Dinosaur, you just don't get Kirby. So that is the shit. That's where it's at.
You know, the one guy I thought that handled I think actually John Byrne did a good job with the New Gods as well. But I really felt Walt Simonson and his Orion series is really good. Man,
yeah.
You know, and I always want to give it up to Walter because he's such a great creator and he's such a good writer and of course a brilliant artist. And really, it's that Orion series was only like 25 or 26 issues.
Yeah, 25 issues. Yeah. I liked the original stuff he added, which I really like. I mean, Kirby killed Kalibak and killed Desaad like pretty quickly in series. And
spoilers.
Well, I mean, whatever. And I I don't think people should use them anymore because he clearly intended them to stay dead. Like if he wanted another brooding, you know, monster to fight, he just would have come up with other.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Some other stupid
monster,
right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. So I applaud Walt Simonson for making what was her name? Justine was Darkseid's new lieutenant or whatever.
That's
she was.
Right.
She was pretty hilarious. Yeah, I liked that book a lot.
And he brought back my favorite New God character, and I always forget.
Billion Dollar Bates?
No, the Green Lantern of Apocalypse, and I forget who created him.
Oh, right.
Wasn't that Gibbons?
It might have been Dave Gibbons, because I asked Walter who created him, and he told me in my interview with him, and I can't remember who it was now. I think it might.
I can't remember which one. Awesome.
But it is. It's literally like my favorite character, because his power ring doesn't work, and he's on Apocalypse. Yeah. He is the Green Lantern of Apocalypse, but totally powerless, and just surrounded by those minions of Darkseid that love him.
Yeah.
And is buried under a pile of idiots, and it's just a great character. I love
that's cool. Speaking of Simonson. The Thor Visionaries just went into reprint. So.
Nice.
That's cool.
Comics do not get any better than that.
He's kicking ass on World of Warcraft. I mean, if you're at all a fan of the game, I would really recommend the book.
Really?
And it's the truth. He's an excellent writer on the series. And again, it's kind of like, that's just the thing with Walter. He's just either been editing or doing covers or very quietly been writing these out-of-continuity series for DC. And maybe because he's still teaching, it's what fits his schedule. Because I know he finally finished his Elric books that he was doing, and was doing covers for the Batlash Sergio Aragona series.
I love Walt Simonson.
Yeah.
Man, I love his Fantastic Four stuff. I don't feel like that gets talked about enough. That's one of my favorite runs ever.
Plus, when they had those, it was Ghost Rider, the Hulk, Spider-Man, and
with Art Adams on the art. Yeah.
Wolverine, that was awesome.
Yeah.
That was
Scott probably remembers this with me a little bit more. You may be a touch too young. You may be
a touch too old.
And more of a DC guy. but the Marvel Handbook.
Yeah.
I mean,
did he do most of the drawings?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So most of my, in my brain, whenever I I visualize what a character looks like in Marvel, it's from a Walt Simonson
drawing.
That's
cool. That's really cool.
He did almost all of those, didn't he?
I think he had to do a lot. A huge number of them.
That's really cool. I had no idea.
My first exposure to the Marvel Universe as a whole or whatever was I got the Book of the Dead issues of those. There's four or five issues with all the dead characters who are all now alive again. It's wild.
Gray.
You look at those little spot illustrations they have, and I've looked at those drawings a million times, and then it's really cool to randomly get the issue that contains that illustration of Colossus catching Dracula's punch or whatever. It's like, holy shit, there it is.
The official handbook of the Marvel Universe, that was back at a time whenever there weren't so many comics on the shelves. And, if you were reading X-Men, you were reading Uncanny X-Men. That was the only one that was out there. Yeah. And it was really, that was the definitive guide to what was going on. Yeah, Simonson was, he did them all, man.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, I loved, of course, as you said, with his Visionaries being back in print and everything. I mean, his Thor run was incredible. It really was. I mean, it's one of the classic runs.
And I know there are people out there that would be like, Thor is Jack Kirby. And,
of course
he
is.
Yeah.
But not for me.
Yeah, well, it's Simonson.
It's like Ditko and Romita on Spider-Man, Romita Sr. I mean, and you could throw Junior in there if you want to, but let's stick with the first couple hundred issues of Spider-Man. Sure. Obviously Ditko obviously that was Ditko's character. Romita made him his character then.
I always picture Ross Andrew.
Love Ross Andrew as well. And I
agree that's what I first started reading.
Ross Andrew. Ross Andrew kicked ass on both sides of the street because he did great DC work as well. Andrew and Esposito are vastly underrated 60s and 70s team.
Esposito had a slow stick hand. Oh, sorry, wrong Esposito.
Not Tony.
Where was I going with that?
We're about to talk about Archie Goodwin and Walt Simonson's Manhunter,
the greatest 40-page miniseries ever.
Oh my god, it's good.
Yeah, hell, man, I remember those detective issues when you'd get the 8 pages of Manhunter, and it was the craziest goddamn thing in the world.
Yeah, we've been talking about Manhunter a lot lately on the show.
It's honestly, I love what Andraco did with the new Manhunter.
Yeah,
but. Paul Kirk should still be around and should be part of the DCU. And I understand they killed him off, but I just James Robinson, we were talking before we started taping about the Golden Age and blowing Mike Norton shit for shitting on the art. But honestly, there's a great character right there, Paul Kirk, and that's kind of a great in between years of what the character was during
Paul Smith.
Paul Smith, but Paul Kirk is the Manhunter character I'm talking about.
Oh, okay.
It was a great bridge between...
Got my Pauls.
No worries. From what he was during his actual Golden Age stories and the All-Star Squadron to eventually what happened with him in the Manhunter series.
Is that still in print anywhere, the Manhunter
No, but I've seen it at Amazon, and I bet you can order it.
When was that coming out?
Early 70s, right?
Yes. Yeah, mid 70s. Yeah, 74, 75.
Then, like, in the mid 80s when they were doing all the Baxter reprints, because that's where I first saw
it. That's right. Mm. I forgot about
that. I've got that.
I've got the shiny gold one. Yeah.
Yes, that's the one.
I'm about to fall apart. I was actually looking through that a couple of months ago.
I bet Amazon still has a few, because that's where I've seen it. And the best thing is the last story, which sadly Archie plotted with Walter and died before he could dialogue it. And they made the excellent choice of still running it as a silent story, and it totally works.
One of my favorite frames of comics is in that issue. There's just this incredible shot of a bridge, and he just does this crazy stylized clouds behind it. Just only in comics, man. It's fucking amazing.
Cool. Yeah, that's really cool. And I've been digging Archie Goodwin stuff in the Dark Horse reprints.
The creepy.
Creepy. Yep. Creepy
and eerie. That's the reason to buy the. Well, I mean, the art's pretty darn good.
The art's incredible. Yeah. But the good news is there's a good spine of a story that, you know, the scripts are supporting that art. So it really is a full package. You can enjoy the art, but there actually are good, quick little 10- and 8-page stories in those issues.
The more I learn about the history of comics and just the personalities that the industry is built around, the more I regret never being able to talk to Archie Goodwin.
Absolutely. Oh, yeah. And I know that's been a recurring theme in a lot of our recent, you know, talks. And I know even without me, obviously I know James Robinson was, you know...
If you talk to any creator that worked in the 70s
through the 90s
through the 90s, you know, Archie Goodwin is on a pedestal.
The guys who work with him loved him, and you know it's understandable why.
That's how you know him as an editor. I'm just, even like you said with the creepy archives, I'm just amazed the storyteller that he is. I've been going back and read. I've been even going back to like his movie adaptations, The Alien with Simonson, which is a fantastic book. But I a year or so ago, I found his adaptation of Close Encounters of the Third Kind. Again, Walt Simonson drawing.
Isn't it incredible when you look at some of those movie adaptations? The 1941. And right now, unfortunately, the creative team is escaping me. I want to say Nearsea or somebody. Or,
I want to say Rick Veitch.
I want to say Veitch, right?
Oh, maybe it was Rick Veitch.
I think it is. Yeah.
Okay. Zardoz. I mean, all these. Zardoz, exactly. Really, it is. Oh, it's insane. Some of these like film adaptations that you took for granted, and then now you look and see who the teams are, and it's like, fuck, I got to read that. That'd be pretty cool. And even, you know, I had a great talk about Chuck Dixon about some that never saw the light of day but were fully made. And he and Butch Geist did a Wild Wild West, the shitty one that got rejected because Will Smith did not want his likeness in a comic book. Isn't that
really?
Fun?
Really?
Yeah, Mr. Hancock. What kind of bullshit is that? So, I thought that was... And then the one that they were petitioning to do, and it's very funny now that Gran Torino was out, was a Clint Eastwood Batman crossover with Dirty Harry. And Eastwood's like, no way.
I think I remember hearing about that one.
Weird.
Yeah.
And I forget who was the artist on that. It's not one of the old word balloons, if you want to dig it up, kids. But
wow, that is goofy.
Because I talked to him because Chuck did the movie adaptation or the book comic adaptation of Snakes on a Plane. Man, that's going to be that really is not going to hold up well, and it's really going to be the butt of a lot of early 2000 jokes. You remember Snakes on a Plane? Said too. I mean, not only are we looking back at, you know, what happened in 2008, but we're looking forward to 2009, and all the lists are coming out at the end of the year. I know
the list time.
I saw CBR listed their 100 great books of 2008, and I agreed with the number one, which was All Star Superman, and you know, I've got no problem with that. And they put Buffy, I think, in the top 10 or top 20, which is fine.
Yeah.
But some of their choices, I felt they really kind of shit on some of the month in and month out books and put them on the bottom half of the 100, whereas a couple indie titles, oh, this was so blah, 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 blah. I'm like, you know, this isn't the Comics Journal, you're fucking CBR. I'm
Kramer's
like,
was it Kramer's Ermont, $125.
Oh, God. Best book.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, it's sublime. See. It was beautiful and sublime.
Where can I download it at?
Yeah.
You know. So
that's I don't know.
Sorry, and I love Jonah. Don't get Jonah. You're a good guy. Don't get me wrong. I work across the street, but I still like you.
Well, it was like all everyone's on their side or something. They all voted.
Yeah, and I mean, and maybe I understand. Maybe that was the vote, and that's how the consensus came.
I think there's an interesting thing going on in comics right now. Is that you'll see lists from one place or another, and they're having a real hard time walking the line between geeky fanboy
and indie chic.
Yeah, and it's like we're respectable and we're supposed to be a revered art medium, and we're also geeky comic book guys. So it's like in no world that I live in should local and Secret Invasion be on the same list.
Did you notice that with because NPR released their pop culture person
torqued me off.
Well, because it was interesting, because first they had the Fonfon Shishi indie list, then they had the mainstream list, which I'm glad they did follow up, because it's kind of like when Time does 10 best graphic novels of the year, and it's like, I don't know any of these books.
Hey,
who am I? I thought I read these.
Skyscrapers of the Midwest should be on best of list. It's an amazing work.
All right.
But whenever you're, and he's a Chicagoan, by the way, right. So we'll meet. But it's great stuff, absolutely. But whenever you have to dig, and they admitted it in the column that hey, this is a reprint, but whenever you put Heavy Liquid as a best of 2008, it's a deep enough pool. You don't have to fish for something that is a reprint of a collection that's almost 10 years old to sound fucking cool. And I know Paul Pope is good, but Heavy Liquid, good. Maybe not best of 2008.
Yeah, and shame on you for not having the list, back when it was actually coming out.
Yeah.
No,
yeah,
I agree with that. I think that's kind
of
silly.
That was some passion out of you, man. Yeah, I'm pretty pissed off about it.
Well, I think lists are created to elicit that response as well.
It's true. And once in a while,
You know what else was one of the best graphic novels of 2008?
And he's also, liquored up like he normally is at 11 o'clock right now.
Also a reprint. I hear it's pretty good. Watchmen. I hear it's pretty good. Yeah, that should have made some best of lists in 2008. As I get 11 o'clock comics angry here, we'll switch over to some lighter fare. We've got an email from one of our listeners, and if you would like to email the show, you can certainly do so at info@aroundcomics.com.
By the way, go to the website, because I got Sal's little email today.
Yeah.
If you haven't been to the website lately, Around Comics, I'm not being nice, because it's your guys' website. It looks fantastic. Congratulations.
That's all Sal.
Way to go, Sal.
And
I was like, I'm tempted to call him up and say, what did you, I think he used the same
stuff that he used. It's a Joomla site.
Yeah, Joomla.
Yeah.
Man, it looks great. It really does. User friendly, very cool.
One of these days you might even pop onto the forum and talk to some people.
You guys get enough of me on the podcast. That's all right.
I go to your forum.
Look, I appreciate that.
Where do you get this time to be going to everyone's forum?
I'm down to like very few forums. Yeah, I don't even go to the comic block anymore.
We'll just Twitter back and forth.
Exactly.
With each other,
now there's Twitter, of course.
All
sadly. Burnham, I hooked up with Burnham. The other Chris Burnham. The Earth 2 Chris Burnham.
That's so weird. Yeah.
He's pals with Bendis.
Yeah, he's a big comic guy. He runs the
nice guy.
I don't know if he runs it, but he's big at the Emerald City show.
Okay. Yeah, he's a very nice guy. But yeah, it's like,
He's good people, even if he's... I made the poor bastard change his name.
Earth 2 Chris.
Earth 2 Burnham.
And I'm sure he's like, no, I'm the Earth 1 Chris.
All right, this comes from Rob, and he sends some salutations, says he enjoys the show, and he had basically been reading, I'm paraphrasing his first paragraph, it's a long email, that he had been a collector through the 70s and 80s and 90s, dropped out, and has come back here in the last couple of years. And has a question for all of us. He wants to know, what do you do with your comics after you finish reading them? Back in the day, you kept them forever in long boxes as quote-unquote collectibles. Well, 30 years later, I still have about 4,000 comics in boxes, most of which aren't worth a thing.
Yep.
They take up a lot of space, and a lot of them aren't even great stories. He says he has a complete run of the Dazzler series. What was I thinking?
Call Jim McCann.
And I like the Dazzler series.
The Dazzler teaming up with Galactus is the greatest story ever.
He says, now I'm buying floppies again in some trades, but do not want to keep everything forever. I hate to just toss them out like old newspaper. Years ago, you kept them because monthlies were the only source of the stories.
Sure.
Now everything good is reprinted in trades or as collected editions.
And even not good.
Yeah. And not good. But some good stuff isn't. I find that I buy the trades or hardbacks of collected series that I enjoy after reading the floppies. Then I still
You're just
have
out of your
floppies.
Mind, buddy.
I'm kind of like that, too, man. I can't do the same thing.
I do
you're insane as well.
I do the same thing. I'm trying to stop. Hey, I do a weekly show about comic books. I need to stay somewhat fucking current.
Well, so. Yeah, but why does staying current mean buying everything twice?
Right.
Because the hardcovers are so pretty.
Oh, that is. But then, like, even the double-page spreads, they don't lay flat. I find the hardcovers to be inferior to the original issues in many cases.
So he says, I've asked everyone I know in comics, multiple LCS owners, etc., this question and searched online. It seems that even though most people do not think comics are as collectibles before, they keep them for forever. I've heard you all dismiss the collector's mentality before on the show, so what do you guys do with your books, floppies in particular, but would also be interested in how you keep or buy collected editions of your favorite series?
I have an answer for that. Unless they're adult-only books, I would recommend donating them to your hospital. Because especially if they have a children's ward, I mean, and again, if it's age-appropriate stuff, and it sounds like a lot of your collection probably would be, that's a nice thing to do, and also it's tax-deductible as well. So I would do that because I think that's a really nice gesture. Those poor kids are stuck in there. They got nothing to do. And, you know, a nice initiative that you did this year was sending trades.
Sending stuff to the military?
Yes. Yep. And I mean, you know, granted, I don't know how floppies would be.
Dazzler issue over in Iraq.
Yeah, well, never know. Kind of like Chris's dad with Santa, baby. In a tent, leave me alone. I'm with Dazzler.
But let me tell you what a 37-pound box costs to ship to Iraq.
Is it a shitload?
Yeah. Well, let's just say that the United States Postal Service is not making it easy for us to send stuff to the troops.
Oh, that's too bad.
Yeah, that was about an $80 postal.
But I believe there are care package organizations that do send stuff out to the troops, and maybe you can get
that would be a great thing to do. Yeah,
you know,
I was talking to Brian Bruce, one of our listeners who was stationed on an aircraft carrier, but the last time I heard was in Iraq, and he said that there's so much downtime that guys will read like 1987 copies of Highlights magazine.
I'm sure
just will read them over.
No,
and
I understand. I feel for it. And again, that's why I feel for the six kids. Mm-hmm. God, I was in the hospital for 4 days and. Really, and luckily it was a healthy comic book week. And yeah, I gave my buddy $40. I'm like, all right, they're waiting for you. Go, exactly. And I mean, I burned through those like in a day. It was ridiculous. So no, I can only imagine the poor sick kids that are just hanging out. And again, the military that's hanging out with all the downtime. So yeah, do something nice like that.
So donating stuff is good. You know, I still bag and board a lot of floppy issues.
Bag and board every goddamn one of them.
Yeah,
but then what do you do with it?
Boxes, man.
When I get sick of them,
he wants to get rid of them.
I give them away. I mean,
give them away, man. Yeah. Well, that's what I'm saying. Don't
library or just, you know, I'm sure your comic shop would gladly take it off your hands if give you a pittance in store trade. Yeah.
There was a site a few years ago as well that specialized in buying anything.
Yeah.
And it was called, I want to say, WeBuyComics.com.
And it's going to be it's going to be a nickel and issue kind of stuff.
Yeah, but again, if you're just looking to get rid of space and stuff, I mean, you know, you
That eBay shit works, man. eBay, Craigslist.
That's true. eBay is still the greatest garage sale going.
Another thing that we've talked about is binding your comics, which I have not gotten off my lazy ass to get stuff together and come up with a format and send it off to library binding. Even though I did look here in Chicago, I'm trying to find binders. It would be easier for me rather than there's a place in Texas that you can send them to.
It's a publishing hub. There should be some binders.
Yeah, but I'm trying to find a book binder here in Chicago to take, you know, 25 issue runs and say, here, I would like this in this, you know, cover and blah, blah.
The hell is the green team? What the hell? You want me to bind this?
You're five?
Yeah, exactly. But I'm switching to trades and hardcovers. They're just easier to read. They're easier to shelf. I don't like boxes. Yeah.
Whatever the next generation after the Kindle is cannot get here soon enough.
You don't like boxes or someone else you know doesn't like.
Yeah, my wife.
I'm grateful I have a third bedroom that's huge right now, this last night I was looking at going, there's a lot of piles in this room.
Yeah, that's the thing. Because I'm with you, Chris. After you read them, they just kind of sit. It's what do you do? And I'll buy the trades and the hardbacks.
A fair amount of them I'll reread, you know,
if I have continued buying the series, like it's somehow Invincible's at issue 57, and I haven't reread those issues since like issue 10. I'm really looking forward to getting back to that.
We're in a different level than a lot of other comic fans as far as input. We're strange.
Well, that's true. Yeah, really. Well, it's a Friday night. Exactly, we're Friday night.
That's what he said. Scott
reviews comics for a blog.
We get paid.
You do creator interviews.
Sure.
Podcast. No, and you do at Newsarama, you have to read all. You're a comic book artist. You're in the biz. Plus, you love comics, but you know you have to read a lot to keep up with stuff. I do a weekly show about comics. I read a lot of stuff, and what I'm getting at is that I don't have time to go back and reread stuff. I have trouble keeping up with what's coming out. So, yeah,
and you know, there's very few books that I would bind. I have to say, like, they really are those few books, like you said, that should be in collected form that aren't.
Gotham Central.
No, not even for that. Honestly, I mean, I've got, like, obscure little runs like The Grackle, which was a Paul Galassi, and I'm forgetting who wrote the book.
Before they re-released them, Denny O'Neill's Question, before they finally started releasing
It would be stuff like that before, again, as you say,
yeah, but how it just seems to be how long can you sit there and wait, because I've been looking at doing Jim Starlin's Warlock forever.
Nice.
And all of a sudden, hey, look, later on this year, there's a Masterworks coming out. I could just get that.
By the way, and then there's another unsung hero.
Yeah.
And if we can quickly just jump back to what we were saying about Great Guys of 2008. Jim Starlin is doing a damn good job cleaning up the space end of the DC universe. And it's really nice to see that after he had kind of maybe, you know, either whether it was the publishers that were tired of his stories or whatever, that he found a nice home at DC and has been given a blank slate with a lot of these guys and built them back up from square one, and they're fun stories. I don't know how well they're being received, but all I can tell you is I'm enjoying them, and I think it's a great spin on, a new spin on Adam Strange. It's a great new spin on Captain Comet. I know he calls him Comet. He's still Captain Comet to me.
All right. a couple things I want to mention. First of all, if you own an iPhone, the Comixology app is awesome. So it's a great pull list and previews, and it's really cool. So if you have an iPhone, pick up that Comixology iPhone app. Will Pfeiffer he's doing...
Yeah, you got a nice Christmas present.
Yes, I did. Yes, I did.
I thought Will liked me.
I'm sure he likes you, too.
No, I'll buy it from him.
There's a lot in the mail.
Yes, if you would like to purchase a copy of Will Pfeiffer's Late Nights at Kinko's, it is a collection of the small press works over... probably well over a decade of stuff that Will's done. It's real funny stuff, and Will's pretty darn good artist.
He showed it to me at the convention that we all participated in, that you real guys really put on, and it looked really cool, and I kind of minimized looking at it because I really do want to buy it from him, so don't worry.
It's great, and you can do that by going to xrayspecs.blogspot.com, and that's xrayspex.blogspot.com. That's Will's blog,
which is very funny.
Very funny, very cool, and you can buy Late Nights at Kinko's there. As always, we are proud to help support the Hero Initiative. We talk about it all the time. It is a fantastic charity that benefits veteran creators in crisis times. You can find out more by going to heroinitiative.org or call 310-909-7809. And we made it really easy to donate. Just go to aroundcomics.com. There's
right there on the front page.
Hero PayPal. And, you know, drop by, man, $3-$4, whatever. It's easy. And it really does make a huge difference in the life of the creator.
Or if they're represented at a convention, go there and drop off a couple dollars. Because usually there's a couple creators.
And there's always cool stuff to buy there, too.
That's what I was going to say.
Did you see they're offering memberships now? Did you hear? I just saw something about today.
What do you get for a membership?
They had like four different levels. I'm trying to remember, but it was like up to...
I'm sure it's at their website.
Newsarama had it today, and I just saw it before I came out here. Cool. But starting at like $20 up to a couple hundred, get some nice trinkets up to private party at a con or something.
That's cool.
Yeah.
That's cool. And I tell you, if you're at a con and John was talking about it, if you're looking for great value sketches, you'll get big time creators, and that really should be. And here's a little con tip for you. Whenever you walk into a con, the first place you should go is the hero booth.
Find out the schedule.
Find their schedule. And it's like, oh, Frank Cho is going to be there at 2? Okay, well, I know to be here at 1:30.
I got a Mike Omen Captain America that way that I love. I got, and actually, again, at the aforementioned last Chicago Comic Con, I got Tim Seeley did a beautiful Iron Man for me.
Gene Haas. Gene Haas
did a great Golden Age Superman
Mike,
for
Mike
me.
Mike Perkins is always at
oh, yeah, at the ones that he's at. Absolutely. Yeah. And Mike's a wonderful guy to get sketches from.
Last year at Chicago, Umberto Ramos was doing.
There you go.
I mean, there's always that should be the first place that you go at a con because you'll get great sketches there. And those guys, knowing that it's for Hero, they not that they don't put their all into it. Yeah, whenever they're doing sketches at their own tables, but doing it for charity, you can tell that they just have a little bit more passion.
Hats off to Perkins, by the way, for the stand this year.
Well,
excellent work. Excellent work.
I want to thank everyone for leaving an iTunes music review.
I didn't do it. I'm sorry.
Do it.
You thanked everyone, but I didn't do it.
Where?
Neither did John.
I left one before you even started thanking people years ago.
I want to thank Scott Cedarwin. But no, this is our thanks to the UK listeners. We have turned a blind eye to our UK listeners for far too long.
For good reason, though, I would say.
These are the folks in the United Kingdom that have left reviews. Super Shmee, Gurgis, Gordy Steve, Crouching Otter, Santa's Boyfriend, Lukey Lobo, Linux67, Arkama, Gargan, Lee Gallagher. Thank you, Lee Gallagher.
Yeah, are you the only guy in the whole fucking country with a real name?
Is Lee Gallagher the British Gallagher? Does he have a sledgehammer and does he whack watermelons and stuff like that?
Lee Mayer, Money Ben, DGP7.
DP7?
Denuding, Paradoxes, Tim B72, Lord Clem, and Robert Corbett. So thank you to all of our listeners.
I love when I do the Venice tapes and I'll get somebody's, like, you know, anagram avatar name wrong. And they're like, you know, it's pronounced Jacob Pound and it's not Jacob LB, for example. Oh. And I'm like, you know,
use your real goddamn name.
Yeah, no, and it's okay. I don't mind that. But really, if I need a fucking Rubik's group to figure out your goddamn name, maybe you've got the problem and not me. Mm-hmm. Right. So, how about that?
Agreed.
So, so that was thanking our UK listeners. Next week, Canada.
I can't wait to hear from Spanky72.
Right. Ottawa 17, says all right.
Hey, Sunnyvale Trash will be there. I know that for
Canada's
sure.
Canada's a fine country, don't get me wrong.
All right.
Good comedy.
You remember to check out Tom versus the Flash a couple times here, a week as Tom walks everyone through the history of the DC Universe one issue at a time. Great podcast. It really is. And I can say that because he's not here.
I remember when he created that.
Yep. Tom versus the JLA. 11 o'clock comics. I'm on there every week.
You will shake your fist at your MP3 player, I guarantee you.
Is there anyone you don't piss off with that show?
No,
I think everyone does.
No, once again, the drunk voice of reason.
I'm saying...
Oh no!
Collectively, all of you, but, exactly.
Yeah. I piss plenty off on that show.
Jesus Christ.
Check out our buddies at ifanboy.com. All right, real quick, Chris Burnham, anything coming up?
I've got Elephant Man number 16 coming out in a couple months, and good Christ, are the colors amazing. I think my art's pretty good on it, but this guy, Tato Caballero, from some country, man.
From parts unknown, a wrestler.
He's one of these European colorists who most people haven't heard of. He colored my hero Ladron on the final Inkle series that only I have probably heard of, but... Good Christ, this guy is knocking the shit out with these colors, man.
Way to go, Richard.
Yeah.
And I'm working on a project for Marvel that I
can't disclose.
But I get to work on one of my favorite characters, Namor the Submariner. That's all I can say. Nice. That's all I can say. And maybe I've said too much.
I'm psyched. Yeah.
Mr. Centris, always find you at wordballoon.com.
Yes, and I'm sorry, but the illness kind of kept things quiet in December, and I know I haven't released a new or hadn't released a new episode since the 16th, but as the airing of this is happening, there should be at least a couple new shows on. I know that we're about to embark on a new Bendis tapes, and Rucka is coming up, Johns is coming up, and more surprises. But I'll tease you with those names at least. Keep checking
Newsarama.
Look to the stars. I'm due to talk to Fraction. We haven't talked forever, and now with the new turn in Iron Man, we have to...
I'm going
to
try and get him up here for the Windy City Comic Con this year. Tell him I'm going to come
I finally saw Charlie Varick the other day.
That movie was great.
I told you.
And I saw Taking of Pelham 1-2-3 pretty recently too.
That's hilarious. You know, it's on. It was on tonight actually, as we're recording this. It's a wonderful movie.
Oh man, those movies are awesome. You, Walter Matthau is action hero, man.
Exactly. Really? It is the he is the least kids. I'm telling you, if you have any space on your TiVo, or if you're looking for a DVD to
wind up the Wayback Machine.
I'm not kidding. Like, just like Burnham said, Charlie Varick and Taking of Pelham 1-2-3 are
Varick,
excellent
he
crime
totally
films.
Bags that chick too. Like, it's hilarious. It's like, I mean, it's the way it's played. It's just like, obviously, this girl would want to sleep with Walter Matthau.
Sure, honey, sit down. Of course, I'd be glad to sex you up.
Oh, man.
It's Buttermaker as an action hero. It's insane. It's Oscar Madison as an action hero, that's and awesome. It works.
The movie's great.
It's insane, but he was wonderful. And Laughing Policeman's a third one. There you
Scott,
go.
Scott right. Cederholm, so, once again, the blog, the podcast.
Wednesdayshall.com. Sooner or later, I'll do a podcast again there. Mostly just writing.
And, of course, we can find you on Twitter.
Yes, Twitter. Yes. I think all of us are on Twitter.
Exactly.
Who isn't on Twitter? This
is, I'm holding out.
Good for you, man. Don't.
I mean, there's enough shit on the internet to waste my goddamn time. The last thing I need is to obsessively follow what Suntress has to say about his last crack, right?
I don't do that.
Out a real rush.
Just had excellent sushi. I don't do that. I always do. Just saw this movie. Just, you know, this TV show is awesome. Oh, here's a great documentary. Yeah. 4-hour Tom Petty documentary. It's been on Sundance. Peter Bogdanovich directed it.
You've been going on and on.
Incredible. Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
Petty?
Truly.
Yeah.
The definitive Petty biography documentary.
Have there been non-definitive Petty?
Well, I think I'm sure MTV gave, you know, shit for 10 minutes to talk about
this,
Tom Petty.
This show is going out on Tom Petty. I'm telling you that right now, because Tom Petty is the shit.
Well, it's called Running Down a Dream. It was directed by Peter Bogdanovich. Mark right now is saying it's fantastic as well. I'm telling you, it is unbelievable. If you just kind of like Tom Petty, you will love him by the end of this thing.
Tom Petty was a gravedigger.
There you go.
For real?
Yeah, he was.
I believe that.
Yeah.
A gravedigger, apparently, Mark.
I've always fantasized about having an excuse to dig up a dead body.
Well, he put him in.
I'm saying I want to be a grave exhumer.
He was a grave digger, not a grave robber.
I want to be a surreptitious exhumer.
The 5 minutes on Twitter and the Monkey Man alone is worth the time spent.
Love that song.
There's 5 minutes on that one.
You heard
now.
my ringtone for my wife is a Traveling Wilburys song.
There you go. Great footage. Great studio footage. Great concert footage.
White, thank everyone. We had a good geeking out session here. It did me good. We haven't done that in a while. So thanks to Chris Burnham and John Suntress and
thank
Scott
you,
Cederholm. Thanks to Mr. Mark Beatty, as always, for hosting us here at Dark Tower Comics and Collectibles. We'll be back again next week. Hope everyone has a fantastic end of their week and weekend. In the meantime,
I hope the middle of your week is horrible, though.
In between time,
we'll be everywhere in
and around comics.
Your Wednesday is gonna suck. Views expressed in the interviews or by guests of the show are solely those of the individuals expressing them and may not reflect the opinions of Around Comics. Any reproduction, rebroadcast, or retransmission without the express written consent of Around Comics is strictly prohibited. All content presented in this program is the sole property of Around Comics, and this has been an Around Comics production. Copyright 2009.